Welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and Alban Gerhardt is back in Wisconsin after about a five-year hiatus, at least so far as I know. It's been 5 years since he was here. He will be playing the Prokofiev Sinfonia Concertante with the Madison Symphony this weekend. Also on that program, Ravel's Rhapsody Espagnole and Beethoven's Fourth Symphony. Welcome back, Alban Gerhardt.
Thank you for having me.
We hear about you've come from Germany.
Yes.
For this concert. That's where you're from originally, of course, and that's where you're living now also.
Yes, in Berlin.
And, you know, we hear stories occasionally about performers traveling 100 years ago or so and the difficulties that they had to put up with to get from one city to the next. How is it today? Is it actually any better in your experience?
Well, it's much better. I told my wife, who didn't want me to go, I said, well, but I go to America and I'm back after 7 days. Actually, it was supposed to be 2 weeks, but unfortunately the Minnesota Orchestra had to cancel the concerts.
Sure.
Because there's a lockout.
Yes.
But it's so quick nowadays that it's much, much easier than back then. If a soloist would leave for concerts in America, he would leave for 2-3 months, because otherwise it wouldn't worth the travel on the boat and everything.
Sure.
But yesterday was just a horrible, horrible trip. It was among the worst, I guess. No, some bird was hit and the plane was cancelled and they rerouted me. Instead of taking 15 hours of travel time, it took actually exactly 24 hours. I got up at 5 in the morning in Berlin time and I arrived here, I think, 4:30 Berlin time. I missed most of the rehearsal yesterday and had half-hour rehearsal. And when I arrived at Chicago O'Hare, where the orchestra picked me up nicely enough, because I would have come far later if I would have taken the plane.
Sure.
I opened the cello case and the bow was broken. The security people at the airport had, I don't know, completely careless opened the case without any reason, because it's just a cello in there, and closed it, but somehow so brutally that it destroyed the bow, which is
those
very sad.
Those bows are not easily replaced.
No, and they're very, I don't think this is repairable.
Oh dear.
And unfortunately, I brought a second bow, but it's a Baroque bow, so I have to borrow from somebody.
Well, I've heard preliminary reports from last night's rehearsal that you were playing was fantastic.
Oops, no, I failed. But that's expectable. No, I love that. I adore this cello symphony or Sinfonia Concertante. Some people call it...
It's a double concerto, right?
No, it's just cello. Actually, it's a cello concerto par excellence. It has nothing to do with symphony, because the orchestra's... It's not in the background, but the cello is definitely the most important thing. You couldn't play that piece without the cello to make sense.
So there's not a second prominent instrument
No.
in the mix. There's not. I see. And is this a piece that's particularly attractive to you? Have you played it often?
Yeah, I played as often as I can, because I always adored Prokofiev for the longest time. He was one of my favorite composers, and I think when I heard Rostropovich play the cello symphony, I was so blown away that I knew I needed to become a cellist. I must have been 11, 12 years old. And it was actually Rostropovich who wrote parts of it. He heard the cello concerto, or he didn't hear it. He performed it with piano for Prokofiev in the 30s, I think. And both of them didn't like it much. So they sat down and rewrote it and came up with this cello symphony, which is much more effective and much more brilliant than the concerto.
You, I assume, have commissioned some works for cello?
Yeah, not too many, because I think there are too many works being commissioned and too few works being played again. So I'd rather commission one piece and then play it 100 times than commission 10 pieces and play each once.
Then that is a big issue, isn't it, with classical music today? You hear a piece that's, well, that's pretty good, and then you just never hear it again.
Exactly, because people are somehow so keen on doing a world premiere. It's like in sports or in track and fields, being keen on the world record instead of just enjoying the race. And we just want to have world premieres, or we're not interested in modern music. So either we have to get more interested, or the pieces have to be better. I don't know whose fault it is. It's probably everybody's fault.
Well, of course, if we look back, 200 years to Beethoven's time, a lot of that music has fallen by the wayside too. Not of Beethoven so much, but I mean of other composers.
Definitely, but I think there it was really the pieces which were not so strong were forgotten. And now, if we only have to look 50 years back or 40 years, Rostropovich, he just championed pieces and he played them again and again and again until they kind of sunk in. And now people don't have the patience or they don't do the effort. And yeah, they're the number one instrumentalists nowadays. They don't really see them or act upon their duty to actually champion new pieces. Like our beloved Yo-Yo Ma, I don't know a piece he has made famous.
That's an interesting point. So is there a piece that you have played again and again for that purpose?
Yeah, it's now about 20 times, Concerto by Unsuk Chin. But I'm running into huge problems championing because people want world premieres.
They want world premieres.
Or at least the American premiere, or at least the second German rewritten version or something, which happens now.
You have to come up with a new angle
For
every performance.
It's very, very sad because it's a fantastic piece. People love it. I played it in Boston.
Chinese composer?
Korean. She won the Grafmeier Award. And not with that piece. She won it for her violin concerto, but everybody says the cello concerto is much better or even better. And I did the American premiere in Boston. The second performance of the set of three was for an audience which is not the typical classical audience. And a lady which was definitely from a lower social standing, she came to me and she said it was her first classical piece she ever heard, and she had tears in her eyes. She was so touched, and it's modern music. It's not some kind of film music, populist approach. It's modern, but with a lot of feeling and melodies and atonal, but for me, the perfect modern piece. It has its own language. It's not trying to bow down to the lowest common denominator, but it's a pleasure to listen to.
And that can be a difficult middle ground to achieve.
It's very difficult, yes. And then one has a concerto like that, and it's not, people want rather something new. It's very strange. It's 6 years old. And
have you recorded that one?
Not yet. I think Deutsche Grammophon wants to record it next year, so we're looking for dates.
We'll look for that. Is that your... you have recording projects in the works before that, though, I suppose.
Yes, I'm actually recording exclusively for Hyperion, but Unsuk Chin, the composer, she has a deal with Deutsche Grammophon, and Hyperion is happy to borrow me, or lend me, what's the word?
Lend you, yes.
Lend me to Deutsche Grammophon to do this.
You have a number of CDs out, and speaking of Hyperion, you have one that's devoted to cello music by Gabriel Fauré, the great and often soft-spoken late 19th, early 20th century French composer. We're going to hear two contrasting pieces, the first of them being his Elegy, which I think is fairly well known among the works of Fauré.
Yeah, it's quite a popular piece.
And your pianist here, no slouch either, Cécile Lacott. Alban Gerhardt was the cellist, and Cécile Lacott the pianist in that performance of the Elegy by Gabriel Fauré. It's 20 minutes past 12, about 10 minutes away from the quiz question, and we'll be hearing more from Alban Gerhardt, too, and from his cello. State of music where you come from, state of classical music in Germany? Is it healthy?
Well, it's like everywhere. It turns more into an event thing. Events sell fantastically and little normal recitals don't sell that much. And it's fewer and fewer people who draw the audiences, which is painful because so much money is being spent on keeping the musical tradition alive in Germany. Everything is subsidized. So actually they don't have so much the pressure with filling halls. but somehow we just follow the foot, or we even go ahead with trying to build up huge names which are not even that interesting to listen to.
So when you say filling the halls, though, do these subsidized concerts fill the halls?
Well, I mean, Berlin Philharmonic is subsidized, and they're almost always sold out. And also the operas, they do very well. But, it's still very healthy compared to other countries. Orchestras, some orchestras being melted down, but we had 200 some orchestras in this not so big country.
That's a lot.
Some cities have 3-4 big symphony orchestras, and we were just talking, you and me, in the break, that the radio orchestras are being combined,
right?
Like merged. The South Radio SWR,
right.
They have two orchestras and they meld them now. They merge them together. Which is something rather normal. They don't need those two orchestras, actually.
But it just means fewer jobs for musicians.
A little, yeah.
And what kind of music are these filled halls providing?
Well, Berlin Phil has very diverse programming. The other day I listened to a late night concert with Simon Rattle, where he conducted actually the substitutes of the orchestra. They have a substitute system in Berlin Phil. It's called the Karajan Academy, where they have a pool of young musicians subbing.
Oh, okay.
And they get trained from the leaders and other members. And they did a fantastic piece. It lasted 60 minutes. It was incredibly modern. There was nothing pleasant, actually, but the hall was filled and people loved it.
They loved it anyway.
Yeah. So actually, Rattle did a fantastic job in Berlin educating the audiences to enjoy and understand good modern music.
Well, we're going to hear a contrasting piece by Gabriel Fauré in just a moment here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Back with cellist Alban Gerhardt, who's playing with the Madison Symphony this weekend. That's Friday night at 7:30, Saturday night at 8, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30. And he's playing the Prokofiev Sinfonia Concertante, and also on the program Ravel's Rhapsody Espagnole and Beethoven's Fourth Symphony. We wanted to hear a little bit of contrast in the works of Gabriel Fauré. We heard, of course, an elegy you expect to be serious and perhaps even weighty. And by contrast, we have this papillon.
A little butterfly.
Is this just a fun piece, or is there more to it than that, do you think?
Oh, it's a bit more to it, but it's very pretty. Good encore.
And again, the pianist here with Alban Gerhardt is Cecilia Codd. Not the kind of thing you would necessarily expect from Gabriel Fauré. I always think of him as being somewhat more serious, but that's not a salon piece, really, though. It's just a little.
Mm-hmm. It has a bit of a salon to it.
You're going to Dublin, right, after you perform in Madison?
That's a good question. Do I go to Dublin?
Check
your
schedule.
That's next month.
Oh,
I
next
think
month
before
already.
I go to
okay.
Zurich. Oh, no, you're right. It's next week.
as long as you get it straight.
I think I booked the flights already.
Before the plane leaves, yeah. Right.
And I booked two tickets this time.
So is there a piece, you mentioned the one by the Korean composer, but is there a piece that you're kind of touring around with these days?
No, I play more or less every concert is something else. I think in these first 2-3 months, I'm doing 13 different concerti, including two concerti by Vuitton and two orchestra pieces by Eugène Isaï, the violinist. Mm-hmm.
Sure, yeah. Well, I think of Vuitton as a violin
exactly.
composer,
it's,
too.
It's a, but it's original pieces, which I All record right. in April for Hyperion.
Oh, great.
And it's going, I'm still learning it. So.
That'll be some addition to the recorded repertory, I suspect, as I don't recall seeing Vuitton cello pieces.
I think there are two recordings out there, but I try to understand what the composer wants and sometimes ignore what he actually writes. So, for example, with the Vuitton, they're rather slow metronome markings. Even the virtuosic stuff is rather slow. And the recordings out there, they are also, they follow those metronome markings. And I'm actually a big advocate in trying to take metronome markings serious. But in this case, I think Vuitton just didn't know a cellist who could do the virtuosic stuff as virtuosic as a violinist would do it. So he wrote the slow metronome markings. And I tried to bring those pieces alive by giving it a bit more spark.
Sometimes those scores are just plain faulty, though, right? Somebody was telling me the other day that they were supposed, I can't remember the piece, but they were doing some kind of archival work with some, you know, the music of some major composer and found hundreds of mistakes in a score, just little things that didn't match, you know, an earlier edition or something like that.
Definitely. I mean, the copying was faulty, and then also some editors were quite arrogant and changed what they thought was faulty, but sometimes the composers were a bit smarter than some silly editors.
Well, leaves always some room for interpretation, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you with me today, Alban Gerhard. We'll be going to be hearing a bit more of your music, actually an even bigger excerpt than we have hitherto heard, after we get these quiz questions out of the way here. And yesterday's question seems to have eluded me. Oh, here it is. Yesterday's question, these journeys began in 1699 and ended in 1715. There were four of them. Those were Gulliver's Travels. If you're kind of literal-minded about, well, when did he actually go? You know, the dates are apparently right there in Jonathan Swift's book.
Amazing.
That was yesterday's question. Here's today's, a little more convoluted. Before the installation of safeguards in the 20th century, people bending over backwards to perform this ritual risked not only indignity, but injury or death. See if you can identify that one.
Playing the cello?
If somebody had said that, we'd give them a prize just for that. I'll give you a prize, Alban, for the most creative answer of the day. Here's the question again. Before the installation of safeguards in the 20th century, people bending over backwards to perform this ritual risked not only indignity, but also injury or death. Identify that ritual. You've got 27 minutes in which to do it. You can email your answer to me at midday@wpr.org, or you can phone 1-800-442-7106. And give your answer to Gabrielle. Don't have to be first in to win the prize. We were going to hear, before, as you leave, Alban, a movement of the Concertstück by Duchnagy. It's in three movements, and we're thinking of the first movement. Is that what it was?
I think the last one.
Or the last one.
The end.
Okay.
It's very mellow.
And it takes a little while for you to put in your appearance.
Exactly.
But it's worth the wait. And performing with Alban Gerhard, the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra, led by Carlos Kalmar. That's a very unusual piece. Alban Gerhard with me for this hour of the midday. And unusual because what you heard there was the whole cello section along with you, the soloist.
Yeah, in the cadenza. At the end it was the whole orchestra, but the cadenza is, I think, the only cadenza I know of any concerto where the cello is being accompanied by the group, and then at some point it flips over and the solo cello accompanies the cello group. It's a gorgeous piece. I only played it once in concert, but
it's such a brilliant idea. Surprised it's not done more often, that you'd have the whole section, you know, playing with you during a cadenza.
Yeah, especially since a cello section sounds beautiful. If you give them different voices, it's quite spectacular if it's well done.
The cello I think it's the string instrument that's said to approximate the human voice most closely.
Exactly. Well, actually, I will suggest it here to Madison Symphony because they have a brilliant cello section. When I arrived late last night to the rehearsal, one of the last stands stood up and played the piece instead of me because I was delayed with all those flight disasters.
And the flight delay, sure.
And she managed. And it's a hard piece, so chapeau.
So you're going to play this weekend then with a borrowed bow because the only other one you brought was Baroque.
Yeah,
and both of them were Baroque. So that's going to be something else to listen for. That's working out pretty well, though, I gather, from what I hear.
Yeah. No problem.
The borrowed bow. We're going to make it an hour with Alban Gerhardt. Well, here's something Spanish from your repertory. This is one from La Vida Breve. What's the appeal here for the cellist, Alban?
Oh, it's very seductive and charming. It's not a cello piece. I think it's an orchestra piece. And Kreisler transcribed it for the violin, and I took the violin part and somehow tried to make sense of it for the cello.
And we'll see how much of that fiery Spanish quality
very
comes
dancing,
through.
Dancing, yeah.
And the pianist here is Rina Dushinsky.
Yes.
That seemed to work pretty well for the cello, that violin piece.
Yeah, it's cute.
And this is a favorite of yours, Alban, as an encore?
Yeah, I used to play it after each recital. I loved that piece. I haven't done it in a long time now. Requiebros by Gaspar Casado.
Means flattery or something?
Yeah, like compliments. And one Spanish guy just told me once, it's more than compliments. It's as if you tell a woman, if you cook the way you look, I eat it all.
Requiebros by Casado. Alban Gerhardt was the cellist, and the pianist was Rina Dushinsky, and we're working up to the solution to today's 12:30 quiz question, a little consultation in progress. They're very, very popular question today, I would have to say. I should mention, before we get into all of that at 1 o'clock, of course, is Garrison Keillor with his writer's almanac, and at 1:05, Ruth Ann will be in with a trumpet concerto by a composer you may not have heard of, so this may be some terra nova for you in the trumpet repertory. And then the music continues until All Things Considered at 3 o'clock. Here's the question today. Before the installation of safeguards in the 20th century, people bending over backwards to perform this ritual risked not only indignity but injury or death. All right. So, and our winner's name has been drawn by Alban Gerhardt today. First, what's the answer? Does anybody want the answer?
Well, I forgot the name again. What was the answer? I had no idea. I'm quite impressed by your audience because so many people called and, 50, 80, and they all knew the answer. I had no clue.
That would be the Blarney Stone in Ireland. And who's our winner?
Well, I wanted to draw the guy who recited Irish poetry, but I missed. So it's Rick S. from Baraboo.
All right, Rick S. from Baraboo, call back, give us your address, and we'll send the prize to you. It's a novel called The Orchardist, and we hope that you'll enjoy that. And remember, it's going to be hazardous out there with some of the weather conditions, with the snow and other forms of precipitation. So do take care when you're on the roads or on the sidewalks. A pleasure having you with me today, Alban Gerhardt.
Thanks for having me, Norman.